Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld. This program is about the evolution of consciousness and who we are as emerging spiritual beings. And that has to do with our understanding of the soul and the nature of the soul and what is the purpose of our life here. And that is why I'm talking today to Linda Howe. She is the Center for Akashic Records, Linda Howe's Center for Akashic Records, and she has been a teacher of Akashic Record Studies for the last 20 years. And Linda, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you so much, Alan. It's wonderful to be here today.
So just to clarify our terms, when you say Akashic Records, you're talking about the life of the soul, the eternal life of the soul. Is that right? Or how would you define it?
Okay, well, what you say is true, but I think there's a better way to identify it. The Akashic Record is, and first of all, it's the word Akasha, right? It's a foreign word, it's a Sanskrit word, but it's a familiar experience for so many of us. And Akasha means primary substance. And so it's that out of which all things are formed. So that's what it's made of. And the Akashic Record is a vibrational archive of every soul that's ever been, and their journey. And so we're all included. Okay, it's a soul-level dimension of consciousness, so it's embedded in the soul. And everybody's records, I think it's so fascinating, because everybody's records have two parts. The first is fixed. And what that is, it's like the blueprint of your soul. It's the imprint, right? It's the code, if you will, of your divine potential. And that's fixed. That's given to you, you know, at the moment of the inception of the soul, and that stays constant throughout time.
So that's your particular signature vibration in existence. That's what you're talking about, right?
Oh, that is really, I love that. Yes, that's exactly what it is.
Okay, I get it.
Okay, but let me tell you what else is so fascinating about it. Is that what travels along with it is the catalog of the lifetimes we live through which we awaken to our soul signature and begin to live that, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's really, on one hand, so we have the two parts, the one that's fixed and the other that's evolving, that really is very current with who we are as we grow and develop and change from lifetime to lifetime to lifetime. And I like to think of that as the chronicles of you.
Well, some people would call that.
So that's what the record is.
Well, some people from some of the teachings I've learned would say that's the difference between the spirit, which is you, and the soul. But that's not how you're defining it, are you? You're not defining it.
No, I'm not. I'm not. Actually, though, now this is a very interesting, from my work, if we look from a different angle, right, we see that the Akashic Record, right, it's embedded or woven in to the soul level dimension of consciousness. And it rises up, if you will, out of the soul, connecting us to the source. Mm-hmm. And so what the record can also be understood, like if we're looking at it from different angles, which we actually are, the record can be understood as the energetic, right, connective tissue between the soul and the source.
So that it holds us steady.
It's like a bridge of light, okay, emanating from the soul to the source, and it really holds us steady as we wake up to the truth of who we are.
But isn't every moment a experience for the soul that must be recorded in vibration? Every sense, every adventure, every experience is a record. right? I mean,
yes, yes. Everything is, you know what? The yes, it's impressed. It's impressionable. It's almost like it's you know, it's got a lot of plasticity, we'll say. But yes, right. And that's what the record. There's a dynamism to it because as we grow and change and evolve and awaken, right, through our lifetimes. The record reflects that back to us. It's almost as if it's the invisible correspondent to who we are as we manifest in the physical world.
Well, if we didn't have that, there'd be no meaning in the experiences of life. That's what I get from what you're saying. You know, it gives us meaning and value and emotional maybe that's not how you're meaning it, but that's how I'm seeing it. It gives us a emotional connection to the embodiment of reality.
Yes, it's emotional, spiritual connection to the embodiment of reality. Absolutely.
So how did you discover this? Because this is a very rarefied sort of spiritual knowledge. And how did you come upon this knowing?
Well, you know, Alan... This is one of those things. It's really the truth. But I'll tell you, when I was about 24, I had what was for me a riveting and truly life-changing moment of spiritual awareness. And what happened really was, you know, I lived my life. I had done everything right. I woke up one day. I had everything I thought I wanted, you know, beautiful apartment, great job, and I was just hollow inside. It was terrible. So I prayed. I prayed a desperate prayer for help, and I had this moment, and in this sliver of time, I became completely aware, like wholly aware, like my whole self, like woke up and realized that I am one with, you know, I was one with the tree outside my window. Mm. And that I was one with all of creation. I mean, it really shook me. And then the other thing that happened in this same, I mean, it was a fraction of a minute, right? Fraction of a second. I also had this incredible sense that I was both known, like completely transparent in the eyes of the universe, completely known and completely loved. But beyond that, it wasn't just love. You know, love is wonderful. But I had this sense of being liked or appreciated or enjoyed. And it just, it took my breath away. Mm. And I thought, whatever this is, and I didn't know what it was, but whatever this is, I've got to have this, right? Now, that happened, I'll tell you what, I was 24 when that happened. I am now 61, right? And now I'm 61. I want you to know I have yet to grow into that experience. Do you know what I'm saying? That's how dramatic
experience,
it was.
That experience didn't stay with you. It kind of like was momentary. You got a flash and then boom, you were back to your...
No, I wasn't, because I'll tell you what, it changed the course of my life. I knew that whatever this experience was, that I had to have it in my life. It was that sense of being so wholly known and loved and valued. So I set off on the spiritual quest, and I did everything, Alan, and it was all terrific. You know, it was great.
Right.
And I came upon... I don't know. When I was about 30, I had a reading with someone, and she said she read the Akashic Records. Now the thing is, she was from Texas. I barely understood her. You know, our accents were colliding. But the thing that was so amazing was that I had a sense of being known and loved and appreciated, very close to what happened when I was 24. And I thought, well, whatever this Akashic thing is, you know, I'm from Chicago, very Midwest. I mean, whatever this, I mean, I didn't even know what this was. Okay. Right. So I proceed on the quest. I had a practice of doing shamanic healing, and I realized I was just, you know, barreling through it, shall we say. And I made a prayer that I be able to find a way to connect with universal love, wisdom, and power. But I wanted it to be simple, like a simple prayer. Well, yeah. I found myself on a panel talking about shamanism. A woman was talking about the records, and I went to her class. Now, when I was in that class, this was 1994, I went to a two-day class on how to open the records. And when I opened, I followed the instructions, and when I opened the records, it was the closest to my experience when I was 24. I almost fell out of my chair, not because of the similarity, because I thought, aha, this is it. So I started reading the records in 94. I started teaching in 96. Along the way, a new prayer was given to me, and that's the pathway prayer process to access the heart of the records. And you know, Alan, it has been the most phenomenal experience. When I first came into the records, it was made clear to me, like through a sense of knowing, that this is an infinite spiritual resource. I thought I knew what that meant. And I want you to know, I'm sitting here, right? It's now 2015. Mm-hmm. I've written 3 books. I'm working on my 4th. And if I know anything about the Akasha, I know that it is infinite, because I feel like I am just scratching the surface. You know, and as a result of my own relationship with this dimension of awareness, a curriculum, if you will, a whole body of work has been revealed to me, that I have used for my own personal healing, and then, you know, of course, passed down to my students and them to their students as well, so that we can all enjoy in the consciousness of the records.
Right. No, I think I had a reading with one of your students, Holly.
Oh, Holly. Yes.
Yes. Holly Hawkins. Yes.
I love Holly. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, she's great. She gave me a very deep reading. So yeah. What you're saying is familiar, but because you've become quite a figure in this field, in this particular aspect of spiritual awakening is the Akashic Record. So when you're reading, does that same thing open up for you that happened when you're 24 all the time now?
Yes, every time. For me, every time. When I use, I'll tell you, this is when I use the prayer. And you know, it's a funny thing, Alan, because I'm not a big rule follower. And here I am. I still follow the rules for this. And the only reason I follow them is because I get good results. That's really the only reason. So I follow, there's a protocol, right? There's a prayer. I say the prayer. And there's an opening prayer and a closing. And then, but in the saying of the prayer, there is a slight shift in consciousness that's just enough to register the impression of the records, right? And
wait,
so
say,
it really
wait, say that
is.
Again.
It's a sanctuary.
Wait, but I missed something. So you're saying when you do the prayer, what what happens exactly?
There is a slight shift. It's a subtle shift in awareness.
Okay, I get it.
Okay,
get
but and it is so that what it is when we work in the records, we're conscious, right? We're conscious, it's responsible, it's deliberate, which is also, you know, very exciting because, you know, in the last century, we had Edgar Cayce who, oh my God, he did such brilliant, phenomenal work in the Akashic Record. He brought the records to the awareness of the Western world. But the thing was, when Edgar Cayce worked in the records, he was not conscious. He was out, and someone transcribed for him. And the other thing is, he was the only one who could do it. He couldn't teach anyone else how to do it. He couldn't transmit a method or a way in. He couldn't transmit the key, right? So it's so fascinating to me. So here we are post-2012, and we are in the time, you know, this is the new age. And it is the time when all individuals have the right, I mean, we're all entitled to a more conscious connection with our own soul. And we now have some tools to do that. And that's what this work is all about. And, you know, it really isn't that long if you think about it, right? From, what, like 1940s and 50s till now, 2015.
So this prayer was sort of given to you, maybe you would say channeled to you, or what, how did you access this prayer that opens up the records?
Okay, let me tell you, this is great. I was working with another prayer that was actually, it was terrific. It got me started. It was a good prayer for that. But there were things about it that weren't satisfying to me. Like, I didn't, like, for me, I couldn't, it didn't have the emotional depth, like the heart depth. So, anyway, I had been working in my records using this other access, saying, oh, what am I going to do? And, you know, what's the purpose of my life? You know, really just wearing those questions out. And I got this prayer. I mean, what was indicated to me was, you know, teach the records. Teach anyone with a sincere desire to learn. Tell them how to do this. Give them the tools and the skills. And I was like, but I don't, how do I do that? And I don't have a prayer and like that. You know, I don't have a way in. And then this prayer was given to me. Now, this really to this day, it blows my mind because this prayer was given to me the Saturday before 9/11, 2001. And on the morning of September 11th, at the time the airplanes were crashing into the World Trade Center, I was on the phone with my assistant sharing this prayer. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, the first time I was sharing the prayer. And it just really occurred to me that in that most profound moment in the history of the world, that breaking open of the heart of the American people, that there was an opening also for something so much greater. And this prayer came through. And I've been working with this ever since.
Wow. Can you share the prayer with us right now? Or is it sort of a private thing?
No, I mean, it's, you know, I'll read it to you.
Okay.
You know, it's all over my website. It's in my books. But it is quite beautiful. And so this is, I'll just read it. Okay. So this
is. But let me just ask, before you read it, is this the prayer you say, and then the records open to the person's Akashic field?
Yes.
Okay.
So we're not going to open anybody's records here. I don't think that's not appropriate for this, but I think it's a beautiful prayer, and I'll read it to you. It'll take a minute, but you'll hear it,
Yes.
You know, it's interesting. Some people really, it speaks to your heart and soul. Okay, and so we do acknowledge the forces of light, asking for guidance, direction, and courage to know the truth, as it is revealed for our highest good and the highest good of everyone connected to us. O Holy Spirit of God, protect me from all forms of self-centeredness and direct my attention to the work at hand. Help me to know myself in the light of the Akashic Records, to see myself through the eyes of the Lords of the Records, and enable me to share the wisdom and compassion that the masters, teachers, and loved ones of me have for me. That's the opening prayer. And then we say the records are now open.
That's beautiful. And I know when Holly was giving me a reading, she actually did open my record. It's like then she had a vision, or she could see, or some psychic awareness inside of her started to awaken. Has that happened to everyone?
Do you know what? It's so well put. Do you know what it is? It clears the connective channel, right, of our awareness to our own soul. You know, if we're reading another person, it clears the pathway of awareness, right, to their soul. But, you know, it's interesting. You do not have to be psychic. This is really spiritual. Sometimes I think in the New Age, I know I've certainly had this difficulty. You know, it's confusing. It seems like, oh, to be spiritual, we have to be psychic. But you don't have to be.
You just have to
have a desire for a deeper connection with your own soul.
And that's what this
connects into.
I think we're all psychic, and it's like just learning to ride a bicycle or whatever. We can all do it. We just have to learn that we can. But that's one aspect. But then the question I really had for you and for Holly, actually, is these Akashic records, your soul's vibration throughout its all its incarnational experience, is that really a place with, like, you know, a hall that has records and books? I mean, I can't quite see
No. What, you know, is what? This is interesting, Ellen. That's the old idea. I mean, and it was a good idea. It was the best idea we had, right? Was that it was, you know, a hall of books and etchings and carvings and in stone and that. But see, this is, the soul is not geographically determined. It is non-local.
That's my point.
And connecting into this field of awareness, right, connecting into that is perceptual. All it requires is a perceptual shift. Now, what I've noticed is that 99% of the people who come to my classes, 9 out of 10 will say to me, oh, this is the records. I've had this experience before.
What are they talking about?
We've all had this experience, that experience of standing in the middle of your life and having the awareness of how this moment makes sense, not only within, you know, the decade that we're living, right, but also within the whole of our life and perhaps even beyond that.
The distinction
is that, that using the prayer, we can enter into this realm of awareness consciously. And otherwise, it's random. Okay, nothing wrong with that. It's just that the time we're in, we're moving into the age of having our own personal spiritual authority, right, and really having access to these things.
Right. So when the person says the prayer and they're working with somebody, you're teaching them to work with someone, they say this prayer, and then they sort of access the vibration of that person's soul. Would you say that's what happens here?
What happens is there's a connection. The connection is made with it's like, I would call it like the sanctuary. Like if I were reading your records, Alan, and of course we do this only with permission, right?
So you would give
me permission. I would say the prayer, open your records, and then it would be as if you and I were in this cocoon, really, the sphere of light that is the realm of your soul, and I would be able to sense. Now, it's an interesting thing. When working in the records, we use very visual terms. People will say, I see this, I saw that. But in fact, most of us have a sense of knowing, right? It is the rare person who hears or sees images. You know, but it's mostly sense of knowing. And it is, and then the practitioner starts to talk, to share what is emerging.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. But, you know, it's quite a, I mean, if this is really happening, and I'm sure it is, but it's quite a sacred experience, a quite a sacred sharing, because you're letting that person into your deep core self. It's like your holy self is being revealed,
God, that's beautiful.
and that person's accessing your sacred being. You know what I mean?
Yes, and do you know what, Alan? That is so, I love that because it really is sacred. It
Of
is
course.
sacred, it is intimate, and that's why, you know, like when I'm doing a reading with someone, like they can't have their spouse or their friend there. It's very personal. It's very intimate. What we're really looking at is who are you from the perspective of your soul? We look to see who you are and the issues you're currently facing right through this lens. And one of the most wonderful things about the records is, you know, the records are governed by the three absolutes, which are fear not, judge not, and resist not. So these three absolutes, like they work together to maintain a very pure and emotionally safe environment for us so that we move into this space, if you will, right? And we are able to let ourselves know the truth, right, about who we are and what our motives have been and our hopes and dreams and wishes. And as in all aspects of life on the planet, you know, energy moves on the formed word. So as we describe what it seems like, you know, this isn't a hard science. It's really not. But, you know, as we describe what things seem like, then what happens is the energy moves.
Right. But
Yes.
no, but yeah, I understand. As you describe it, as you reveal it, as it gets clearer, things can clear up because there may have been some confusion around the place or some stuck
Yes.
energy or
Yes.
but another question I have is when you talked about those two different levels, there's sort of the unchanging source that we all are, and then the changing ongoing experiences that are shifting our vibration. So those two things are on our soul level, the Akashic record. But some people say that we're here to experience everything there is to experience. So if you're a king or queen in one lifetime, then maybe you're starving in another lifetime. It's not karma. It's just that the soul desires the experience so it can, in a sense, have the totality of what it is to be human. Now, do you agree with that sort of idea?
You know what? Yeah, I mean, I mostly agree with it. I don't disagree with it. I just, from my work, the way it appears is that it's just the angle is a little different, Alan, and I think you'll understand what I mean. So from an Akashic perspective, the soul at the point of inception, right, is perfect and is whole and is good. Like the core of each soul is goodness. Okay? Then what happens is for that the challenge, now this is easy to know, like when we don't have bodies, you know, we're out there in the light fields, very easy to know our own goodness and to live from that truth.
Well, let
But
me
when
just
we're
clear that up for a second. I mean, how I understand it, it's like we come into being. I wouldn't even use the word good because that is a duality. I would say to experience creation for the evolution of creation itself. So it's good. It's awareness. It's love in a sense, you could say.
Yes, it is love.
Yeah.
Okay,
So I'm
so
with you.
then,
Yeah.
yes.
Okay.
So let's, okay, so at the point of inception, the soul is a manifestation, a dimensional manifestation of love. And the challenge is to know that as truth and to live from that place while in human form. So I move from lifetime to lifetime, right? And in every lifetime, the challenge is to recognize, you know, and it breaks into our awareness, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, but the love that we are breaks into our awareness over time. And the game, if you will, is as we're progressing, the question becomes, you know, how to be in a state of unconditional love, first for the self, then for others, then for all of life. So even as I am, because both, you know, even on one hand, I am love, I am wholeness, I am perfection, I am also, while on earth, mortal, flawed, limited. So the question is, how do I love myself? You know, can I love myself even though I'm imperfect? And we work with this throughout time until we come to love ourselves no matter what. And then we progress into loving others no matter what. And, you know, from an Akashic perspective, the end of time, whenever that is when everyone is in the fullness, the exaltation of the love for self, others, and all of creation.
Right. I get that. And I know that's true. And I know that that's our evolution. But in the meantime... in the meantime, we, and, you know, the human experience is, well, shall we say, a fall from grace. But it's also a beautiful thing, too. But many people get stuck in the density and they do some not so nice things to themselves and other people. And they really forget the love. And on a soul level, they are wanting to do that to have an experience because it's all love ultimately anyway. So, but is that how you see it? Why some people don't do such nice things because their soul is wanting that experience and it doesn't matter?
I don't see it that way.
Okay, tell me.
Tell you how I understand this.
Yes.
That at any given point, every human being is always, without exception, behaving in a way that they believe will secure for them an experience of being loved.
Yes, I agree with that. Even if it's robbing a bank or
even
whatever.
Even if it's ridiculous. Right.
Yeah, even if it's killing some or was stupid. Yeah, whatever.
Right, right. It's just to make themselves. It's like this is the most. The way I'm going to get love is I'm going to, you know, I don't know, hurt somebody else. Yes.
Or take drugs or something because the drugs
are a substitute
for love, right? So, yeah. Okay.
Right.
I'm with you. Okay.
Yeah.
But they're seeing just a low level of a substitute love, and I would say their soul is wanting that level of separation or something. Why are they doing that when obviously that's, you know, not the highest for them?
Well, at that moment in time, it's the highest for them.
Well,
and here's the other thing that I've learned, and I want to tell you, Alan, some of the things this really is a challenging concept, but so the idea is, let's say I'm a bank robber, and let's say last lifetime I was, you know, Mother Teresa. I don't know, I had an orphanage somewhere, you know, when I was doing something very philanthropic and was wonderful, and in this lifetime I'm robbing banks.
Right.
Okay, now, what I have seen in working in the records of various individuals, and in my own as well, what I've noticed is this. Very easy to love ourselves when we meet our standards, when we are achieving our ideals. But a greater challenge is presented when we find our best efforts are pretty lame and even harmful. The question becomes, how do I love myself when I am a rat? How do I love myself? Is it possible to love myself? Is it possible to believe that the core of my being is still love, even though my behavior is atrocious? That, and especially for old souls, this is a real challenge. How do I love myself when I don't meet my standards? Because we are here to, like, part of the mastery of the human experience is unconditional love in experience and expression.
Mm-hmm. No, I like that. It actually sounds a lot like Matt Kahn. Do you know who Matt Kahn is? He's been
No.
Oh, you'd love him. I interviewed him a couple of months ago, but beautiful. He says some similar things. So would you say then that how can I love myself even when I'm not a nice person or my behavior's
right.
not?
You, right. How do I love myself when I don't meet my own ideals?
But it sounds like there's no evolution then to the soul, because I do think each lifetime is an evolution where you're learning more love, not
right.
less.
But it's not just, no, I understand this, but it's the way I've seen it in the records, it is about an expansion of love. And so we see, you know, it's very easy to love ourselves when, you know, it's, when we're meeting our own, you know, when we think we're cool. And it's,
right.
and it's easy to love other people when they're nice to us. But expanding out from there, you know, how do I love myself when I fall down? How do I love myself when I don't, you know, get the job or the whatever? How do I love others when they don't understand me? How do I love others when I don't understand them? See, it's more. I think it's more spherical than like a linear climb.
Right. I see what you're saying, but is it more evolved? It sounds like you're saying it's more evolved. Like, okay, I can love myself when everything is beautiful, and you know, I'm creating abundance and I'm creating joy and beautiful relationships. But and that's one level. But you're saying almost the higher, more evolved level is to not have that, and then the challenge of loving myself even more. But that does go against sort of the other ideas of our own evolution, which, you know, who knows what's right or wrong.
Well, here's you know what, I know what you're saying, and you know what, I can go there, but here's my observation.
Yes.
The people that I know are, and the people I've worked with are certainly multidimensional beings, multidirectional. But what they are is they're complex. And so they can have, and I mean, I know this for myself, I have some areas of my life that are very easy for me and other areas that require, where it's like, how can I be so good, right, at this and so lousy at that? I know people come and they talk to me. They have great relationships, but their money is a mess. Other people come in, their health is terrible, but their money is great. Do you see? We all have, so it's not, and of course, when we raise the bottom, right, when we raise the bottom of, you know, what happens is everything improves across the board. You know, when we have growth and awareness in one area, of course, it spreads out to every area of our lives. But everybody, you know, we're like little spherical Rubik's cubes.
Right.
No, and so that's, yeah.
Yeah, no, that is, and I think Akashic record readings, the exact thing you do, I was hoping and maybe romanticizing the fact that maybe that could clear all that up, you know, or not. I don't know. But yes, when it raises it up, but when we get to the soul level, when we could talk to our own soul and see, well, I don't need to have lack of abundance. I can have everything. I mean, we can have it all. That seems like it's how it's supposed to be, but maybe that's a fantasy. Maybe that's maybe that's not for the soul's evolutionary process.
This is a great question, right, to explore, right?
Yes.
It's you know, manifesting, right?
Yes.
And bringing our soul's purposes to life and living our destiny. Okay, now.
Yes, isn't that what Akashic readings do? I thought, okay, but
that's
go ahead.
What the purpose of an Akashic record reading is to dignify the human being so that it is easier for them to know the truth of who they are and to align with that truth and to go forward living it.
Beautiful.
Okay. Now, manifesting, when we're looking in the records, what we see is that manifestation is directly related to our soul's purposes. And so the more clear we are about those deeper, I will call them like promptings or impulses of our soul, those great desires that we've been carrying with us probably for lifetimes, right, that we want to really bring them to life at this point in time. It is, we can always have what is ours. We can always have what is required to bring our soul's purposes to life, whether it's time, money, you know, people, energy, whatever we need.
Mm-hmm.
The trick is, if there's a trick,
yes.
And I think there might be, but the trick is we can't have, first of all, we can't have what's not ours. And second, first of all, we don't even want it. But the other thing is, it's that it is very hard to secure and maintain anything that does not directly align with our soul's purposes.
Okay.
So when we talk about having it all, I think we really have to qualify that.
Right. But so the Akashic readings helps us get in line with our soul's purpose, right?
Yes, yes.
But could it be your soul's purpose to live in poverty or to rob a bank or to, because on one level it doesn't matter because it's all experience. But on another level, it does matter because we want to live the most, you know, integrous, highest form we can for us and everyone else. So that's the part maybe I'm a little confused about. On one level, it doesn't matter because we're everything. On another level, it does because...
Okay, but here's the... It is confusing. And this is... I believe this is one of the great questions of our age is really addressing, I think, the ultimate paradox, which is, how is it that on one hand, I am infinite, eternal, immortal, unlimited. That's very real to me. I am, you know, infinite. I am imminent. I am immediate.
And we know that.
I mean, just that's true. And you know what else is true?
What?
While human. We're talking about while human. I am mortal, flawed, limited, right? So this is the big conundrum. And so the idea is to find the center point, to live from the center, to lead from the soul, so that our human self, right, our hearts, our minds, our wills, move into the service of the soul. Because that is, I mean, you talked about duality a little earlier. This is where duality collapses, as we move into fusion, right? But we lead from the soul, and then the rest of us falls into line.
So you're saying when we realize the limited self, but that limited self then becomes devoted to the infinite self or the bigger self.
Yes.
I mean, that's the alignment. And that's where we're moving into in this age of consciousness. That's I agree with that. And I think there's an upliftment that happens when the limited self does dedicate its life or its purpose to that bigger service, you know.
Right.
And that's where we're at culturally, and that's why this sort of movement is evolving beyond religions and beyond everything it has known in the past to encompass a much wider possibility.
Mm-hmm.
That's exciting for me. So the technologies that you're presenting are valuable for accessing those parts of the greater self, the greater mind. And so do you notice a shift in the records you're reading for the last 20 years?
Absolutely.
Tell me about that.
You know what's interesting? I'll tell you. I started reading the records in 94. And this is what, I mean, since then, I mean, this is what I do for a living. You know, I've been doing, you know, 20 readings a week for 20 years. So here's what, you know, when I first started working in the records, it was in the 90s, and it was a time of, I want to say, making peace with the collective past. So we would open the records, and it was just, you know, it was like an avalanche of past lives.
Uh-huh.
And today, like if I were to open your records, Alan, I would only get past lives as they pertain to a presenting issue.
Mm.
See, like in the collective, that whole that whole sea of unresolved past lives has been resolved. And now
really?
They come up specific. So that's a dramatic change.
Wait. So, let me see if I understand what you're saying. So something shifted vibrationally on planet Earth for that to happen? How'd that happen then?
Do you know what? I don't think it's a planetary vibrational shift. I think it is, I would call it a reconciliation in the collective consciousness.
Okay.
See, it appeared to me that there was like a dammed up, like a pent up, like a whole body of collective past lives. Mm-hmm. that were haunting us, basically. And what happened is that enough people were doing inner work, past life work, enough people woke up. I mean, perhaps critical mass, I don't know the numbers. But, you know, enough people were making peace with who they had been in prior times and places to relieve that, to take the pressure off.
Right. So now you're seeing, are you seeing, though, a vibratory change within the Akashic record field itself, though? No, you're going to the
field itself. I'll tell you what.
Yes.
It's vibration. Now we're going to talk vibrationally speaking.
Yes.
The vibration of the record is, you know, it's really an exquisite. It's a very rarefied. It's exquisite. It's refined. It is so fast, and it is so elegant, and it is much more. I want to say there's been a quickening, or I would say, certainly since 2001, a series of quickenings within the Akashic field itself. The other quality is there is, I want to call it an ever-increasing expansion. Like the field itself just seems to be expanding, expanding, expanding. Now, is it expanding simply because I am becoming more adept at working in it? I don't know. But, you know, there it's like
but
as
I
if
do
there
think it does
is
have
more
to
of
do
this.
I do think it does have to do with your deepening and your, you know, really being familiar with the territory, and it's like you start to see more as the more your eyes are open in a certain state. So it could be you and whatever else is going on here.
But,
yeah.
But do you know what else? When I first started teaching people, I taught people how to read their records. It took 2 days. It took all day Saturday and all day Sunday. Okay? Now, when I teach a live group, I like to be with people, and it's a lot of fun to do it. So we take the 2 days, but the fact of the matter is everybody's in the records by Saturday morning. You understand? So we're not going through this. And there used to be a lot of physical distress. You know, people would have headaches and stomach aches and they'd be faint. We have none of that drama. No more drama. People are in. And even to the point, you know, that I've written these books where people, anybody who wants to, can pick up a book and learn how to access their own records. It's quite simple. So.
Right. Well, that's a good sign. I mean, I think there's an evolution going on. There's an upliftment. There's an acceleration. It's there's a shift in the field, for sure.
Oh, yes. Yes. And there's the other thing, and this is in the last, I would say since 2012, there has been a huge, I'll use the word epic. That's how big it is, right? An epic release of resistance to acceleration. It used to be like everyone was afraid. People would be quite timid. Now people come, they come for readings, they come to classes. They're like, I have to learn how to do this. They're very matter of fact. So our sense of worthiness and deservability has been transformed in certainly in the 20 years I've been doing this work.
But tell me, how does it, I mean, just practically now, we've been talking like out there, which is great, but practically, how does it really help someone when you read their records? I mean, what kind of stuff do you get, and how does it shift people's life in this world?
Okay. Well, do you know what? I'll just tell you for myself.
Yes.
Right? Okay, so here's my thing. One of my things for many, many years was that I had a very hard time speaking up for myself. Okay? And, you know, I tried all kinds of things, right, to be able to speak up. But I always had the sense that if I spoke up for myself, someone would kill me. Now, that is an irrational fear. You know, no one ever held a gun to my head. I've never been in that situation.
Well, but not in this lifetime anyway.
That's right. And so let me tell you, so I went into my records. Oh, you know, and I'm upset with my mother and my aunts, and they're all lousy role models and all this razzmatazz. Anyway, I go into my records, and here's what I ask. I want to know, what is the root of this problem? What is the root of this problem, for heaven's sakes? And the next thing you know, I have this awareness. Now, I'm not seeing with my physical eye, but, you know, I have this sense that I'm a little girl and I'm holding my mother's skirt. Mm-hmm. And we're in this dumpy hut, I don't know, maybe in Northern Europe. And there's a lot of little kids, there's no father, and there are soldiers. Mm-hmm. And my mother is very protective. And she's telling them to leave, and they basically say to her, if you don't shut your mouth, we'll kill you. And she tells them, you know, they're like teenage boys with guns, and she's like, blah, 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 get out of here. Anyway, they kill her.
Oh.
And I make the decision. But here's the thing, Alan. I make the decision that if I speak up, I will get killed. Now, right. At that point in time, that was a great decision I made. I mean, it saved my life, right?
Exactly. At that point,
okay.
Yes.
Okay, at that point. So once, you know, and so I taught it to my children who taught it to their children. And, you know, we're all our own ancestors.
Right.
You know, it goes on and on. But the thing that was so interesting is all release is facilitated. All release is facilitated through acceptance. Mm. And so as I was able to accept that that this was a good move, and that at the point of origin, this was a, it was the right thing to do. It was a loving act. I was able to give up my resistance to the pattern.
And well, what you make, you
interestingly
made
enough, it it changed.
You made yourself conscious. I would say that. I would say more you became conscious of the source of the pattern. It wasn't an automatic thing. You brought light to the darkness or whatever you want to call
right.
it. Yes. And by doing that, you freed yourself from the unconsciousness. I mean, Jung says that if you, until you bring light to the dark, it runs you. So, I mean, yes, but that makes sense. So, yes, get it.
Yeah.
So when you do Akashic Record readings and teach other people to do it, they are going to the source of these patterns.
Is that source it? Of the pattern.
And that is a great benefit. I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
That's like moves
yeah.
people forward into
right. It relieves people of the bonds, right? You know, whatever is holding us, you know, people always talk about, oh my God, I've got these blockages. I feel like I'm being held back. And so what we do is working in the records, we're able to see, you know, what are the ideas, what are the patterns that are keeping us stuck. And then we just take it from there. And it's, yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm just curious because on a soul level, didn't your soul create that pattern to have that experience to stay stuck for however long it was stuck
mm-hmm.
for? I mean, it's and then so your soul's also creating the reading, I suppose, to bring the awareness to it. But some people
exactly,
don't.
Exactly, because it's time.
But some people don't ever get the opportunity to free themselves from their patterns.
Oh, this yes, they will. Everyone, at the right time, everyone will do, everyone's finding their way.
Mm. Right. They're all evolving in whatever way.
Everybody's evolving.
Right.
Everybody's evolving. And, I mean, there are some, some lifetimes are more important than others. Some lifetimes are more productive than others. And so we want to just be open to that, but that as a unit, we are in the collective, we're working as a whole. As each one of us does our own individual work, right? It's like the difference, it just even letting you know, like initially when people came to an Akashic Records class, oh my God, it was intense. It was so hard. And now it's not at all.
Right. So where do you see us going? What does the future, can you read the collective soul for the future of the planet and humans and see what, you know, it will look like in 10 or 20 or 50 or 100 years if, as we progress along these lines?
Do you know, I'll tell you what, I don't know.
Okay,
I mean, I don't, like, what I look at, when I even entertain that kind of a question in my records, I just see this, I want to call it the amplification of light, the dissolution of darkness and cloud and shadow. I mean, I just see this ever-increasing light. So
yes.
That's what I see. I mean, I don't see, you know, in terms of events, I don't really have anything to say about that. You know,
no,
I just don't know.
That is the event. That is it.
That is the event, yeah.
I mean, it doesn't matter the specifics of the events, but the overall acceleration and availability of light. So on a soul level, from the Akashic level of rings, we're moving out of the dark times, the unconscious times, the denser times. We're moving into higher frequencies.
Much higher frequency. Uh-huh. Much higher frequency.
So on the soul level, though, is there is no linear time, though, right?
Right.
So when you tap into the Akashic, you're reading the, you can tap into the future as well. Did you say?
Right, but we, see, everything is from the present.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And the record is not about, so the only place we can work in the record, or anywhere for that matter, is in the present. So I step into the record at the present. Now, I can open up to, I can ask for, you know, when we work in the records, we're asking for guidance and direction. We also ask for courage to know the truth. But what we're opening up to are possibilities and probabilities, as opposed to like absolutes. Right.
Okay.
There are some collective absolutes. Like one of the absolutes is that all of us, every human being, will come to love the, you know, every soul will at some point in time be living in a state of unconditional love for self and others.
Right.
That's an absolute. Okay. How that happens, I mean, there are so many factors. I mean, you know this. There's free will. There's choice. I mean, we are working with so many layers of possibility and also mastery, right? Mastery of consciousness, that we're in this big explosion of it now.
Yes.
So that the details, you know, it's very interesting even what we can, I want to say, get a sense of or tune into, perhaps, is what the experience would be like or what experiences might be like, right? But particulars are really secondary. You know, because they keep changing. You know, when I think, I don't know, you know, what 10 years ago, I don't even know if I had a cell phone. I don't know what year is it. Yeah, I think I might have a cell phone. But, I mean, you understand. The rate of change for human beings is so phenomenal right now.
I totally agree with that. But don't you think at some point when you tune into the records, all you really get will be pure love?
I mean, absolutely.
Right. So
absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what... Do you know, it's an interesting thing. I think it's a great question. This is when we work in the records and, like, we see who we are and we look through the lens of the soul, it's as if we are viewing, our perspective is the end game, the completion, right?
Right.
And that is, it's because it's, you know, the beginning and the end are all the same.
Right.
And it is the constant in the Akasha.
Yes, of course. I get that. Yes. But it's the detail. It's the progression. It's the path. It's the ways mm-hmm. we take to get there that makes, I guess, the story interesting, right?
Right.
It was just the beginning and the end.
And the stories are great. I mean, you know this. It's like, oh, my God, the stories of people and the heroic adventures they've been on for ages.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just, you know, one story is more inspiring than the next.
Yeah, and it's still going on. We're still in it, you know? We're still going through it.
And I'll tell you, this is a little challenging, you know? It's a little bumpy out here right now.
Is it a little bumpy in the field right now?
Yeah, it is. There's a lot of change. Do you know what it reminds me? It's like water, you know, when water's changing state, right? When we go from water to steam, boy, you know, it bubbles up and the bubbles crash against the pan. I mean, when there is a state change, it's a little, there's collisions and there's bumps, and then, but what happens is that once things break open, then we move into the state of steam.
Mm. And you think
that's the process we're in right now.
For everyone, not just for those bubbling and boiling.
Oh, no, everybody. Everybody's in the pot.
Right. And that,
everybody's in the pot. Some people are the ice cube. You know, we're all in different states, you know. So somebody, you know, we start out as a big block of ice, all of humanity, and the heat's on. And
but so some
it's going
people are
there.
Definitely holding on, like the institutions, like, you know, the old establishment is holding on to that block of ice because they don't want to melt. And
right.
You know, they're, and that's okay. I guess that's what they want to do. But, you
well,
know,
you know what? It's the best idea they have.
Right. It's like you said before, it's what they, it's how they want to be loved. It's the only way they know to be loved.
Right. Right.
But when do you wake up from a, you know, being an alcoholic, thinking that's your only idea, way of being loved, to like saying, well, maybe there's another way. I mean, that's a moment there, isn't it? When that
yes, but those moments, that's really, okay, those moments of change,
yeah.
What it takes, and we've all, everybody who's on the path has had a moment of realizing that their approach is not working. You know, we have all had that moment of recognizing the futility in trying to fit life into our plan, whatever the plan is, you know, whatever our particular approach or strategy or solution was. Each and every one of us has bumped into a failure of our old ideas. And it is that failure that has given us the freedom to let go, whether it's a self-destructive personal pattern, you know, drinking, smoking, whatever, whether it's a limiting pattern in relationships, right? I mean, we can go on and on, but it's that's what, oh my God, it's so exciting. So failure is our friend.
Wait, but how do you know, let's say relationships, how do you know that, you know, to let go or trying to make it work because you know it's your own stuff and this person's stuff, and so you keep going through it to try to make that work versus saying, well, this is never going to work. I mean, how do you know the difference between those two different things, or you're working on some sort of job or something, and you just say, oh yeah, if I keep going this way, I'm going to make it big, but you know, you keep running into obstacles, but you know, are you supposed to overcome those obstacles? It seems like, or are you supposed to say, well, this isn't working? I guess that's what I'm asking. You know, there's an obstacle to achieving something, and you could see it as, well, there's too many obstacles, and I'm not going to, and this is just not my path, or I'm going to meet those challenges and go through and maybe get the desired goal that I'm at.
Yes, yes. But see, this is where things like free will and choice come in, and also where we are personally, you know, we're cultivating our personal mastery of our awareness. Okay, because sometimes, you know, we say, oh my God, I was in that relationship way too long. I was at that job way too long. But the fact is, we can't leave until we're done.
Uh-huh.
We
How
can't.
Do we know
it's an energetic impossibility.
But you can leave tomorrow when you know you're done. How do you know you're done?
You know.
You do?
You just know.
Okay. You might know, but you might then take that drink because you're not done. You know?
Right, and if you're not done, see, part of it is, okay, I think the 50, another one, I love challenges, right? The $50 million challenge is to not judge the process.
Okay.
Every path, no exceptions, is a path to divine awareness. I don't care if it's drinking margaritas for breakfast.
Yes.
Okay,
I
it
agree.
Does not matter. And so part of it is the more I am open to the possibility that the fact is I am doing my best. I may not like it, but it's my best. And it's all going to be okay anyway.
Mm-hmm.
See, part of it is to get the pressure off. because the pressure, resistance keeps us very stuck. Judgment and resistance keeps us stuck.
Yes.
You know, some lifetimes we're just going to be drunks in the gutter.
Well, yeah, but if we're conscious, you know.
Then we'll be conscious drunks in the gutter.
Okay.
No, but you see, part of it is to let go of the judgment about that. Because if indeed, you know, we're really done, then, you know, once there's no judgment on it, that frees us to get up and do whatever is right for us.
Right. Yeah, we still have a lot of judgment, but I don't know. I think every lifetime we're here to make the most of it, and maybe being a drunk in the gutter is making the most of it for whatever soul lesson you need to learn. But I don't think so. I think I don't know. That's just my judgment, of course, you know. It's just,
mm-hmm.
So.
No, the thing is, no one ever gets up. Here's the other, you know, my mother taught me a great thing. And what she said is no one ever gets up in the morning and says, I'm going to ruin my children's lives. No one gets up and says, I'm going to make sure this is the worst day ever. People don't do that.
Right.
Even on the worst day of our lives, we're like, well, maybe I'll make it a little better. Right?
So
it's in us. It's in the DNA.
Of course.
Right?
So what are you saying then? What are you saying about it all?
That it is in all of us, that I agree with you, that it is in all of us to rise to the next level, whatever that is.
Yes, yes, yes.
And so
and
to
moment,
step back, right, to step back and get all the pressure off.
Yes, yes.
Okay, and that opens us up to rising to the next level.
Yes. Okay.
Much more easy. You know, it's much easier then.
But as far as the Akashic field and the soul's vibration and all that, in a way it doesn't care because each experience is equal to every other experience, whatever it is,
yes,
on that non-judgment level.
From the non-judgment level, yes.
But
from the soul level.
Yes.
Everything is part of an orchestration, right? To help us awaken to the magnificence of our soul.
Right. And there are times we're not doing that. And we're here. I think we're here to do that. We're here to awaken to our own magnificence and to acknowledge that and feel that love. And, you know, that's the incarnational journey, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll do whatever we need to do that. But so that's why we're here. Yes.
Yes.
And some days people just don't feel like doing that. I mean, for whatever reason.
Some days the human experience is so hard that it's easy to forget the truth.
Right. But don't you think at this day and age and whatever's gone down, in a sense we're in the mist, you know about the ancient mystery schools and you know that mm-hmm. people used to create those challenges and do those disciplines to get to realize the magnificence of their soul. So I think we're all in this mystery school, whether you know it or not, to mm-hmm. meet the challenges of each day, the best, maybe to even push ourselves a little bit. If we,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just my feeling, you know, that's
mm-hmm.
just
mm-hmm.
what I want to do for me, mm-hmm. you know, to meet those, to be the best I can be, whatever that takes. Maybe that takes, you know, getting up at 6 a.m. and running 5 miles, or maybe it just is meditating 2 hours, or just being kinder to strangers, you know, feeding the homeless. I mean, there's an infinite amount of ways we've created here to bring out the magnificence of the soul. But I think there might be one way that might be better than the other for me or not. I don't know.
Right. But see, I think, you know, this is where, I mean, if we understand that every individual is a cell in the universal body of consciousness, and that each cell has its own place within the collective. And so what's right for one could be not so good for another. Do you know, I'll tell you what, my partner gets up and goes swimming in the morning. You know, she swims, I don't know, a mile, whatever it is. She swims a lot. You know, I don't swim.
Right.
I'm not getting in the pool. It's not going to happen.
Right.
And, you know, but I have other things that I'm doing, right? But it's an interesting thing when we look around. Part of the challenge of the human experience is to be aware of who we are as human beings and to use use our apparatus, right, to really help that awakening along. And so whereas for her it's swimming, you know, for me it's line dancing.
Yes.
You see, and that's what part of it is, we have to, you know, I think it's very challenging to make room for everyone to do it their own way.
Well,
but that is truly the way.
No, yes, I totally agree that, and the challenge is to not judge everybody's way, except of course when it interferes with your way. Which, you know, I think we can live in a planet where it can be okay for everyone to do exactly what they want and be at peace. I think that's possible. And I think that's what we're evolving towards collectively.
Absolutely.
And
I completely agree that where we're headed is that everyone is okay with everyone else. Whether we agree or understand one another.
Yes. 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 But I do agree. We're in agreement there.
Yes.
So.
Oh, my God. All right, Al. Oh, it's really wonderful to talk to you, Alan.
Yeah, yeah. Just tell me about the latest book you wrote that.
Okay. My latest book. I love this book. It's called Discover Your Soul's Path. Through the Akashic Records, Taking Your Life from Ordinary to Extraordinary.
Okay. Yes, I like that. Yes, and you teach this too. I mean, you do that, right?
Right. And I have classes coming up, and I teach. I teach people the work, right? How to access their records and to, you know, clear obstructions to their awareness, so that they can actually discover their path and really embrace it and walk it with dignity and pride.
Right? Yes. I think it's beautiful that you're doing this.
Thank you.
Maybe we could do a reading, actually. Would you? I would love.
You know what? I don't do readings on the air. I don't think.
No, I don't mean on the air. I mean off the air sometime.
Off the air. Oh, that's another story.
Yeah, no, I don't mean on the
yes,
air.
Yes, Alan, that's something. Yeah, but sure, we could talk about that. I'd be happy to do a reading for you.
I'll email you about that. But no, I enjoy what you're, I mean, because when you're really dealing with this all the time, like you're dealing with people, you're seeing their multidimensional beingness.
And, yes.
And I think that's really the next level of our evolution. You know, that's what we're moving into as a culture, as a civilization. That's what I think. That's
fascinating. But I agree with that, that because, I mean, what's happening even in doing readings for people, right, is that as a practitioner, it's really much easier for me to discern I'll call it the multidimensional and even multidirectional nature of people. And most of the people that I I've been talking to, certainly in the last couple of years, their personal awareness is so far beyond what it was, you know, 10 years ago even. I mean, it is remarkable. People's awareness of themselves as really walking around aware of the great paradox, you know, that they are infinite beings and mere mortals all at the same time. You know, standing in line at Trader Joe's, it's like, oh my heavens.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But there's something in the mundane experience, if you can infuse it with the extraordinariness of it, the extraordinariness of it, it does merge. There are moments where those two things
merge. But see, this is what it's all about, right? What it is, what it's all about, and really what this book is about, is stepping into the world as a sacred opportunity that every aspect of the human experience, whether it's being incarnate, whether it's dealing with authority or discipline, responsibilities, commitments, each and every situation we face is an opportunity for a direct experience of the divine, and also to come face to face with the magnificence of our own soul. That's what it's all about. So that, and really in the collective, we've moved beyond, there's a great deal of us who have moved beyond the personal healing, right? Like my first book is all about the method, how to read the records. My second book is about personal healing. It's healing through the records.
I think you're right. A lot of us have moved beyond that.
The question becomes, how do I maintain my spiritual awareness and participate in the world? How do we do that? And that's what this book is all about. That it can be done. And when we, as we make peace, as we let go of our old ideas, right, and make peace with, the human reality, this is what gives us the power to make the changes that we've come to make.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Changes proceed from peace.
Yes,
so we have to first get the peace, and then the change follows.
Yeah, no, definitely I see that. Integration is where we're at right now for so many people. You know, it's like the ordinary becomes the extraordinary.
Absolutely.
Extraordinary. And the mundane, and the mundane takes on a quality of presence, you know. That's another key in, is the more you're present with the moment, the more the levels and levels of reality start to show themselves. So I think we're moving into something very amazing that has not existed before. At least that's what I'm hoping for.
Oh, it is. It's already underway.
Right. Well, thank you for your, you know, this is a dedication. It's, you're not just doing this as a job.
It, never in a million years did I think I'd be doing this. It's like I have been so moved by this, and I see how, like, my own personal relationship with the records has just been like the golden thread woven through the whole of my life. I am continually amazed and astonished at the depths and the possibilities that are revealed to me through this relationship, and that it has been like an anchor is very limiting. That's not the right word. It has been a force, a guiding force, really a light shining the way for me as I've lived the whole of my life. I am so grateful. I mean, it's been wonderful. I'm so glad I didn't miss it.
Well, you know, it was your destiny, but it also it's a real testament to the reality, if we're talking to some rationalists, some hardcore rationalists, that this is real, that we do have souls, that souls evolve and keep frequencies of experience. And so your life has been a testament to the reality of our soul's creation, our soul's eternal nature.
That's,
I mean,
right.
You've dedicated yourself to that. So I'm thanking you for that.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Oh, thank you. That's so nice.
Yeah. Well, someone has to thank you for it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Alan.
Of course. Well, it's nice connecting. And we will be in touch. And
okay.
Thank you for being so passionate and open-minded and, you know, tuned into your destiny, I would
thank
say.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you for asking such great questions.
Well, this is what we're here to do. So
I know. And you know, and you're wonderful. You ask great questions. I live for good questions. So I thank
all
you
right.
for that.
I got more
and
where
thank
that
you for
came.
Doing your work, Alan. I appreciate it.
Well, I got more where that came from, okay?
I'm sure you do. I'm sure you do. Another time. I'll be back another time. Thank
yeah,
you
but
so
right
much.
Right now, we're good. We're good.
Okay, we're good.
You.
We're good. Okay, thank you
Lots
so much.
Bye-bye
now.